Hi, Kat. Welcome back to Book Fair.
Hey, Ash. It's good to be back.
And once again, we are Book Fair, the podcast for readers by readers, asking the question, should I read that? And this week, we are talking about Martyr by Kaveh Akbar.
Awesome. I'm so excited to talk about this with you.
Before we get into that, why don't we start with, what are you reading this week?
Yeah. Okay. I've been in sort of a reading drought, I would say. I finished The Immortal King Rao, which I think I was in the middle of last time we talked.
Right.
And it put me in such a slump. I feel like this could be a possible future up about what to do when you're in a reading slump, or books that are like good books to read to get you out of a slump, slump breakers. And also maybe a discussion about like when, if ever, do you quit a book? Because I probably should have quit it, but I didn't. And it took me forever to read it. And then I didn't read anything else while I was reading it. And then it put me in a slump. I know this is a relatable experience, so maybe we'll talk about it at some point. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't for me. It didn't get me going.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. And then I have also been really busy, so I guess that's that's a likely hypothesis as well. I've been super busy. But typically, I still find time to read, and I just haven't had much time. But I am about halfway through Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange, our next book club book, and I'm really enjoying it so far. Yeah. And then I'm also back in my adult literacy class, which I did.
Yeah.
There was one in the fall term, and now they're doing another one in the spring term. And so I'm back in that. It was the first week last week, and the first book is Dorothy Day's autobiography, The Long Loneliness. And I'm really enjoying it. It's not a genre that I delve into too frequently. I'm not often reaching for memoir, but I'm really enjoying it so far. She's an incredible writer and just a really fascinating person. And so great to be talking about it in a discussion group. Talk about a slump breaker. It's a great way to break a slump. Book club, some kind of discussion group, class. It's like,
absolutely.
Yeah, deadlines work.
Yes. As it turns out, structure is really helpful.
Yeah. So I'll finish that up for class this week. And then when we next speak, I think those will be either finished or when I'm finishing. But I did pick up a copy of Passing this weekend.
Oh, my God.
Because I felt like all of our listeners took your advice and read it and loved it. And I want to be just like them and do the same.
You're welcome, listeners. And you're welcome, future Kat.
Yeah, I think I'm going to enjoy it. And you're right, it's short. Maybe another good slump buster. So
definitely.
That's what I've been reading. What about you?
Yeah, honestly, I too have had a slow reading week. It's been very busy. I'm now on spring break, but I feel like the push up to spring break, work is so busy, and then just been running around a lot. So I read Martyr, obviously, and I'm so excited to talk to you about it. And then I read for my book club here, The Collected Regrets of Clover, which was, I don't know if it would be classified as a rom-com, or I don't know what you would classify it as, honestly, but it is the story of a death doula.
And
she lives in New York, and her job basically is, as people are dying, she like shepherds them through that process just by being there for them. And so her whole life kind of revolves around death in this way. And it's basically the story of her learning how to live.
People that have that are dying natural deaths, or people that have chosen to have a death with dignity?
Dying natural deaths. They did not get into any of that.
Interesting.
It didn't totally work for me. I think part of it is it grew on me, but the beginning, the main character has that like oh, I'm just smart and quiet. No one could ever be interested in spending any time with me. And I have such little tolerance for that, that
yeah,
I found myself just sort of like rolling my eyes for the first 75 pages. And it did get more interesting, but overall, probably not totally for me. But I'm excited to talk about it with my book club tonight. And that is by Mickey Brammer, The Collected Regrets of Clover.
Okay.
Should we move on to news?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have just a little bit of book news. We can start. We have some adaptation news. The first being, there's going to be a new Bridget Jones's Diary. Fantastic.
I'm so excited about this.
Do we think this is going to be about, like, their baby grown up? Like, what do we know anything about the storyline?
No. I've seen some different theories. One is that Bridget Jones has a younger lover, which I'm like, oh. I don't know about that.
Don't do that to Colin.
Yeah, that's, I agree. Or yeah, maybe he's their baby.
It's like, it seems like it hasn't been long enough for that to be their baby, but we don't know.
Talking about the baby, it's because,
oh yeah,
Leo,
the big
Woodall,
news is actually the casting.
Yeah, Leo Woodall has been cast in sort of a veiled role. We don't know what he's playing, but that's a big casting.
Yeah, it is.
So I hope that, not that I have any, you know, general qualms about age gap relationships, but I don't know that I need to see Bridget Jones date Leo Woodall. I don't know that that's what I'm looking for on an entertainment level.
I'm very curious, though.
That's what it is. Yeah. Or maybe it's about their daughter. Maybe they have an...
Oh.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
But it did make me think that I'm due for a Bridget Jones rewatch.
I love Bridget Jones's Diary. And I remember going to see Bridget Jones's Baby, mm-hmm, in theaters. And we're watching the movie and there are all these scenes that I'm like, man, when did they record these? Because they look contemporary, but they're not in the movie. And I didn't know that there was a second one. So I had seen the first one and then saw the third
and was just so
confused by what was happening in the second. I was like, oh, there was an entire movie that we just didn't watch.
Yeah, you do need that. You need the middle.
Yeah, the context would have been helpful. Mostly I was just like, wow, were these all outtakes from the original? Like, is this never before seen footage?
You're like, wow, not. They're really giving us so many little Easter eggs here. What happened to them in the interim?
It was not.
Yeah, no. Okay. Well, it's just those three too, right?
Hugh is coming back.
No, I know. I know the, sorry. Yeah,
oh,
I know the movie three.
just the three
movies, right?
Yeah.
Okay, which, yeah, Hugh Grant is coming back too.
That's
They're all
so
coming back. I feel like mostly this discussion has revealed how rusty we are in the Bridget Jones universe.
Yeah, it has. We need to catch up for sure.
Yeah. It's the edge of reason, that's two, right?
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah. Okay, we need to do a full rewatch.
Maybe that's what we'll do this weekend when I see you.
Yeah, upcoming fourth installment. Okay, so we have three. There are three movies. If anyone else is like, Ashley, there are three movies.
I thought that there was one
already.
Other movie because Kaylee went to the movie with me,
yeah,
and also hadn't seen the second
Honestly,
one.
Honestly, fair. Because also the third one came out like 10 years later.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah. Okay. Well,
okay, but
we are
Leo Woodall
and
Bridget
Jones. Huge Leo Woodall fans. So regardless of what role he's playing, I'm seeing it. And I mean, we're huge Colin Firth and Hugh Grant fans. Honestly,
so true.
Renee Zellweger, I could take her or leave her. But we're in it for the men in this case. We'll be there. Sorry, Bridget.
I'm in it for you too.
Okay. Well, a better woman than I. I'm fully in it for Hugh and Colin and Leo.
Yeah. Okay. Hugh or Colin? How are we ranking this?
Do I have to choose right now?
Yeah.
I feel like I want to weigh in on that after I rewatch all the movies.
Okay, I see this.
Maybe I'll get one of those shirts that were like really tacky that say like in like serif font, like Hugh and Colin and Leo and the friend. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a pretty niche reference, but I feel like it could be a good conversation starter. So
that's true. The people who would get it would really get it.
Yeah, they'd appreciate it.
Our next adaptation news. Oh, sorry.
Wait, I feel like we need to full circle this to the fact that Bridget Jones's Diary is a book by Helen Fielding.
I've never read the book.
So maybe that's good homework for us too, to read the book. I've heard it's hilarious and fun. And yeah, there's a reason that it's stayed around as part of the cultural conversation. So maybe we should do that too.
Yeah,
we're going full Bridget Jones.
I like that for us.
Okay, now we can move on.
Yes, our next bit of news. They are doing a new Broadway staging of Romeo and Juliet with Kit Connor in Rachel Zegler, which, amazing cast, but the music is going to be original music from Jack Antonoff, who is kind of a lightning rod of a figure at this exact moment. But think it would be sick, so...
I think I'm really curious about this. Yeah. I love a contemporary Shakespeare adaptation. I love it.
Me too.
Show us what you got, Jack. It's been a while since we've had a Romeo and Juliet as well.
True. So I think that'll be good. And then finally, Ocean Vuong has a new book coming out next summer, which we are very excited about. I absolutely adored On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
Yeah. We've already begun emotionally preparing ourselves. We recommend that you do the same. Probably need about 12 months prep time.
He put out a book of poetry, Time is a Mother. Did you read it?
No.
Okay, I haven't read it either. I feel like I'm not as good with poetry as I am with novels. So... it's been something that's been on my list for a long time, but if never.
I appreciate that you asked me this question, but obviously you knew the answer would be no.
I didn't know for sure.
That's true. There's no way I would have read a book of poetry and not talked to you about it and been like, okay, you know what I read?
That. Yeah, I see
Although,
that.
even On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous is like it's very poetic in its form.
Yes. I mean, he's a poet.
Yeah.
That's why I loved it.
I know. We're excited about that. I feel like that's a good segue into murder. Speaking of poets.
Should we talk about our tortured poet of today? You knew that I was going to have to do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no. I was hoping that you would do that.
I mean, truly talk about a tortured poet.
Yeah. It's kind of a slow pitch, but you know what? We'll take it.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about murder.
Okay, so Martyr, our book fair book club book of the month, follows a man named Cyrus Shams, who is a poet and a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. And he is living in a quiet Midwest college town where he had gone to college. And now he's graduated. He's in his late 20s. He's in a recovery program. And he is sort of thoughtfully, somewhat dramatically depressed, I thought. Aimless, but seeking something meaningful out of his life and thinking a lot about death and how we talk about death and then also how we talk about life. He immigrated to Indiana when he was an infant with his father from Iran. They're Persian. And now both of his parents have died. His mom died in Iran when Cyrus was an infant, when her commercial flight was shot down in the Middle East by the American military. And his father died recently when Cyrus was in college. So now he's living in this college town. He's kind of stuck. He's in recovery. And he becomes obsessed with death as a catalyst for meaning in life and begins thinking a lot about martyrs and starts a project, Poems About Martyrs, thinking about martyrs and how he could be a martyr to create more meaning in his own life. And in his research, he learns of an Iranian artist, Orchideh, who is dying of cancer, and she is staging a performative art exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. So she has taken over an exhibition room, and the performances, she is no longer doing any sort of cancer treatment. She is just allowing herself to die, and she's sitting in this room and allowing people to come and speak to her about death. And so the similarities between her interests and Cyrus's interests, and also their shared Persian ancestry, is too much to ignore. Cyrus and his friend go to Brooklyn for Cyrus to talk to her, and we see what happens from there.
Excellent. Thank you for that synopsis, Kat. We'll get into a little bit of the reception. So this has been really warmly received. So there was a really big article about it in New York Times. That's how I first heard about it. I don't know how you first heard about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I feel like it's been everywhere. A lot of people are talking about it. In every bookstore you walk in, it is at the front, spotlight on it. Seemed to be a highly anticipated first novel.
Yeah. I feel like at the beginning of every calendar year, there's a couple books that get the golden spotlight that you're hearing about, like most anticipated releases of 2024. And this was
definitely one of them. And I wonder if part of that, so he's got blurbs by Tommy Orange and Lauren Groff, who are kind of literary darlings. And he appears to be a friend of theirs. In the acknowledgments, he thanks both of them for their friendship and the work that they did with him to help him write this book. He is running in these circles. He is a poet and has been a poet. A successful, well-respected poet.
Published in The New Yorker and poetry publications. And
so the debut was anticipated and has been really warmly received.
I feel like we should mention, too, that he is a professor at Iowa. Neat. Iowa English program, MFA program, is
the writer's workshop.
Yeah, it's one of the best in the country and is very well connected with the publishing world.
True. Very true. Okay, I didn't know he was a professor at Iowa. That makes sense, too. So, again, highly anticipated, very well received, and I think rightfully so. I loved this book. A few just kind of quotes I really liked from some reviews. So the headline for the NYT review is "A Death-Haunted First Novel Incandescent with Life." And I thought that so perfectly encapsulated how I felt about the novel. Obviously, it is about dying and death and this desire for death and all of these people who have died, but it is so full of life and this desire to have a meaningful life. And then I loved, so we'll talk a little bit about the structure of the book. It is mostly in Cyrus's perspective, but we do get a mixture of characters that are surrounding Cyrus. And I really liked this from NPR. "The mixture of voices, ideas, and characters shouldn't work because it's too much, but Akbar makes it work beautifully, and the novel has a wonderful sense of cohesion that makes each separate element as enjoyable as the whole." And I really, that resonated with me because there are pieces of this, I'm like, oh, I would read this as a short story. And I love it.
Absolutely.
Just on its own, but it all fits together so beautifully and so intentionally. So it worked
totally
perfectly as a whole, but also worked each separate part on its own.
Absolutely. No, I love that quote. I'm glad you pulled that. Okay, I think we should get into it. And here's your official spoiler warning. If you haven't read the book and you don't want anything spoiled for you. Stop listening. Yeah. Stop now.
We're going to get into... There's some big spoilers here, so...
There's some big spoilers, yeah. So definitely stop listening if you don't want to know, and we're here when you read it and you want to hear us talk about it.
Okay, excellent. I think we should start with your note, like death and life. Basically what these two things are about. Cyrus wanting to have a life that means something, but feeling that life is sort of insufferable. So maybe instead he can have a death that means something.
Yeah, and I think that is, I mean, this isn't like a hidden theme. It's very obviously presented to the reader as a main theme almost immediately. And then we see that throughout the book. But I don't think that not that being relatable is, I don't want to put a primacy on that, but I don't feel that obsession with death. Which, that's not a bad way to put it, because it's not that he's obsessed with death. It's that he becomes certain that death is the only way, in the best way, in the maybe not even the best, the quickest, surest way to create meaning in his life. Which I do think is not a common feeling.
Yeah, I do think.
Maybe also underscored by the fact that, yeah, the surest way. But also, he starts this project on martyrs, and there's not really that many famous martyrs, and yet everyone dies. Which, in my estimation, I'm like, it does kind of say something that...
Yeah, I do think
of all the ways to die, a very, very small number of people have their death define their life.
Yeah, I would push back upon that slightly, thinking about his Persian context, because that is something that he talks about a lot, is like back in this environment, or like to martyr is like the ultimate way to exist in this society, and like the children of the martyrs who are given like different opportunities, and like I think the concept of martyrdom is different.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And also, that's a really good point also knowing that what he's grappling with is understanding that part of who he is while also living in Indiana, where there are people like me who are like, I don't really understand this martyr thing. and like the American childhood and world that he lives in every day, he's balancing those things all the time. And I think you're totally right. And that's a really important aspect of how he's thinking about this, and like why it is maybe more interesting and complicated.
Yeah, I think it just complicates things for him. And that's part of the most interesting pieces of the book, are those kind of dual identities, having grown up here, and this interest in martyrdom he feels even stranger about, like when he first goes to see Orchidae. She's like, oh, another Persian man obsessed with martyrdom. And he's like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I know, but I'm different. I'm obsessed with it differently. But I think that's really interesting.
She's like, sure. Yeah. yeah.
But something I...
Yeah, and he's also had, you know, a really interesting life, and in that most of his adult life has been consumed with addiction.
Yes, which we meet him at presumably like his lowest point. There's the first chapter is him before he gets sober.
And I don't think he's seeking meaning through his addiction, but it does seem to be providing a meaningful distraction or substitute for what he feels like he can't quite access otherwise. Do you think that's fair?
I think that is fair, yes.
And both of his parents have died, and he's grown up with death being a big part of his family conversation. His mother died violently and unfairly. She was murdered when he was an infant, and then his childhood is shadowed by this death, and then his dad dies in his early 20s, and that's the extent of his family, really. So death is a big part of his life.
Yeah, so let's talk about the flight. Because his mother goes down in a flight. Embarrassingly enough, I had never heard of this before.
This is something that I recognized the name when I read the name. The Vanson, am I saying that right?
I don't know.
Like, I didn't identify it also embarrassingly when I first read about it.
And I looked it up immediately. So I was like, this can't be a real thing that happened. But I think he opens those chapters with like almost like press briefings of
right.
the story yeah, says, from like the American side.
Mm-hmm. It's like a military report.
Yes, that's perfect.
And so his mom is on a commercial flight. It's in 1988. And the flight is shot down by the USS Vanson. I think that's how you say it. V-I-N-C-E-N-N-E-S. Vanson. The USS Vanson shoots it down because they think that it's a threat. It's obvious that this was just like a major fumble.
Yeah. And I think
they seriously aired.
What's like particularly affecting is then you get the military briefing where it's like they talk about, oh, like 280 people on this plane that just like immediately perish. And they're like, you know, sometimes accidents just happen. And you're like, Jesus, yeah. Fuck. Okay.
Yeah. Which, like, I don't know how you think about that growing up every day.
No.
And he talks a lot about that, where he's just like, my mom was murdered.
Yes.
It's like, yeah.
I don't know. I, too,
yeah, she was.
Would have an insane relationship with, and then to move to the United States so quickly after that and to grow up in this country that murdered your mother, it very complicated. And I think
very complicated.
Grapples with it in a really interesting way throughout the book.
Yeah, yeah. To even pass judgment on Cyrus, I'm like, I can't. This man has a lot going on in his young life.
And I think part of what haunts him about this is he would have been on the flight, but he was too young. This is the story, at least he's been told.
He's been told,
for his life,
yeah.
Is that like, he would have been on this flight with his mother, but he was too young to go. So he stayed home. So it's almost like he is living a life he never should have had.
Yeah. And then when they arrive here, his dad is working in a like a chicken farm, a chicken factory,
mm-hmm.
and is working 10-hour days, 6 days a week. And his life, the life that he sees practiced in front of him is just like work all day. That's it. Just work and work and work. And so I don't think he, and he's separate from like the culture that he was born into and the rest of his family. And so he's not grown up with many depictions of what it looks like to live in a way that you feel matters.
Yeah.
Or to have people talking about that around him.
Yeah. And it seems like, at least in his description of his childhood, he was always like a pretty unhappy kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think fairly so, based on a lot of the context that we just described. But he talks about just kind of always suffering with like the weight of being alive.
Yeah. And I think extremely intelligent.
Yes. And then goes to college, and this is when his addictions begin. And we get all of this later because mm-hmm. we meet Cyrus kind of at his lowest point, and then we meet him once again when he is sober.
Yeah.
But a young sober.
Yeah, and really
he's sober at, he's 29, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I've never been an addict, and then I've never recovered from that addiction. But, so I don't know if this is entirely true, but it seems like perhaps it would feel like kind of a rebirth in a way. Like,
yeah,
a starting over in a way that you're thinking about your life totally differently. And so he feels at the beginning in some ways, like he's looking at this, like, I don't know, people do this at all times in their lives. Maybe when you go to college or when you have a baby or when you get divorced or who knows, there are all sorts of small and big things that can make you think that perhaps what you thought mattered doesn't matter, and maybe you weren't thinking about it at all and now you want to start thinking about it. But he feels kind of like fresh and raw and new.
Definitely.
In that way, because he's not quite sure what his life is going to look like post-addiction.
There's also a lot of conversation in the book and in his like meetings about a new life, and that any one of these moments, like he could have lost that life.
Yeah.
And so I think it's similar to the way he thinks about how he should have been on the plane, or like moments in his addiction that he could have died, that like he now is living this life that he almost feels like he shouldn't be living. And so it has to be mm-hmm. meaningful, but he doesn't know how to do that. He doesn't know how to give it yeah. meaning. Where his yeah. interest in martyrdom okay, stems.
I'm going to read from the book that Cyrus is writing, The Book of Martyrs, when he's talking about his own addiction. And he says, "Beautiful, terrible, how sobriety disabuses you of the sense of your having been a gloriously misunderstood scumbag prince shuffling between this or that narcotic crown. The superficial details may change. It wasn't a truck, it was business. It wasn't a sweetheart, it was a family. But the algorithm is inexorable. A drug works till it doesn't. Dependence grows until it eclipses everything else in the addict's life. Rotten sun. Joy withers in the absence of light. Passion, jobs, freedom, family. We all have the snorting spilled coke off bathroom tile stories. That stuff is only interesting to those blessed with a rare cosmic remove from knowing actual addicts. Active addiction is an algorithm, a crushing sameness. The story is what comes after." And I think we meet him at the first page of that story. And he's aware of it. And wants it to be meaningful, but doesn't know what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, to continue his metaphor, it feels like he has writer's block.
Totally.
He is trying to, for the first time in his life, take an active role in shaping what his life should be. And he has no idea how to begin that story. And I think sometimes, I'm really just going to beat this metaphor into the ground, I guess. But I think sometimes it's easier to start at the end and to think about mm-hmm. like, okay, well, I know that ultimately I want these characters to end up here. So now I need to work backwards and see how I can do that. And so I can understand this fixation on the end. Because if
death.
You think like, I want my life to end in a way that has meaning, it's a lot more complicated to think about how do you give it meaning than to say, that's what I want. And so I think we meet him when he is at the starting point and he is starting with the end.
Also, the stakes are so much higher for him, or I imagine it feels that way because, I'll beat the metaphor too. Most of us are like, oh, we're going to have to write a couple drafts. We're not just going to sit down and key out the greatest novel of all time, like the best story we could possibly come up with. It's like part of life is writing drafts and then tossing drafts. But his first draft was so life destructively bad, close to death, that I understand why he's terrified to write anything else in a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's seen the end. He's seen the end too closely to know that, to ignore the gravity of it.
I think that's true. I also feel like the way we're talking about the book makes it sound really heavy.
Yeah.
Which it is at times.
I know. Yeah.
But I also
I was like, we need to move into something else. Because like,
how fun it is.
Yes. No, I laughed out loud often, and not in like a haha, life is crazy way, but like it's genuinely humorous.
It's really like, funny, and
life is just very funny and light and silly.
I think one of my favorite parts, when we first meet Cyrus, he has this job working at a hospital where he is basically, he's an actor to help residents, medical students, people mm-hmm. training to be doctors, have difficult conversations. So he will come in and like pretend to be a family member of a person who has died, or he will pretend to be a patient who has a terminal illness, and the doctors in training have to talk to him and practice what they would say to someone, and then he grades them. This is his job. It's just like kind of note how well they are doing in terms of their bedside manner, their ability to deal with these really tough moments. But the way that chapter is written is simultaneously so funny and just like deeply affecting. Because mm-hmm. there's a point towards the end where it starts to become very real to him, and he almost accidentally opens up to this woman because he is so frustrated by her inability to do this right and to be sensitive to this person in front of him, that he just like fully unveils his life to her. And I remember going through that chapter just like laughing and then like shedding a tear.
Yeah.
And it was,
yeah, at the end she's like, she does a terrible job.
She's so bad.
And then she kind of meets him there. And then at the end she's like, do you need a like therapist hotline number?
And he's like, I hate you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very funny. The other chapter that had me absolutely in stitches, and it's been a while since I've laughed out loud. I often laugh in my head or find something comical, but it's rare that a book makes me audibly laugh. I was cracking up at the chapter where he and his best friend's name is Z, and Z goes with them to Brooklyn. But before they're living, they have some flashbacks to their early relationship when he and Z take a job off Craigslist that was advertised as like some doing some yard work for this guy in exchange for fresh groceries. And they get there and it's like, it becomes clear that it's just like this weirdo who has kind of a fetish of watching them work in the yard, but like nothing, you know, lurid happens. It's just a little odd, but they're just happy to do it because they like chop some logs and then he gives them a couple bags of groceries, which to me, I'm like, that is such a grad student move. It was telling me that you're like, well, a little weird, but
we need the groceries.
Like, what are we going to eat? Yeah. I guess it's fine. And got to eat somehow.
This is a moment of like pretty deep in the addiction phase.
Addiction,
but
yeah.
Not quite to the stage where like things are that bad. Like he's not having a bad time. He's having actually a very good one. So this is also struck me as like, oh, we're just doing this for the bit. Even more than for the groceries. It's like, well, this is just kind of a funny thing for us to do.
A way to pass the time. Yeah.
Until he like cuts off his toe.
Yeah. And it just like becomes chaotic. But I feel like these little side stories, the ones that that weren't necessarily connected to the main plot of Cyrus writing this book and then going to Brooklyn to write the book were my favorite part of the book. And I feel like, okay, I do want to say any critique I have of this book is nitpicky. I loved it so much. I thought it was one of the most energetic, exciting, creative pieces I think I've read in years. But then it almost made me critique it more because I was like, this is so good. It was almost transcendent. I have little nitpicky things, but nothing that makes it worse than anything else I've read recently. I thought it was astounding. But I will say my biggest nitpick is that I thought the plot became a little unnecessary and a little overwrought and a little too convenient and took away from, I think a lot of the real meaning came from these.
Yeah. Here's what I will say to
rather
that,
than the big plot points that he's going through.
With the ending, particularly, I was like, oh, this is a story about Z. This is a story about Cyrus and Z and what it means to find meaning in relationship and community and the life that you're already living. And I do think, I mean, we can talk about the Orchidae of it all, which we should. But I think especially once I got to the end, it's like, oh, all of these flashbacks were just to highlight the fact that this is about them. I think because you need to have Cyrus searching for meaning in the wrong places and searching for them in big places to ultimately find them in the little places that have always been there. I think you really, that is the moment he has where he just like is in the park with Z and he's like, what have I been looking for? This is living.
And he can only do that after he's had this, like what he thinks he's been looking for given to him and then let him down.
Yes.
Okay, because I do think we have to talk about it because when, if ever, did you realize that Orchidae was his mother?
So at first I thought that she was, what was his mother's lover's name?
I don't remember, but yes, that's what I thought too. She was the lover.
Okay, this is the lover. And there's a moment that I was like, maybe she didn't get on this flight. And I think I would have been more suspicious if we didn't have a chapter. Because when we first get the chapter from Roya's perspective, so Roya is his mother, I was like, oh, interesting that we can be given this perspective even though she's dead. And I think I would have been suspicious of that if we didn't get the chapter from his dad's perspective.
Yeah.
Because...
And his uncle.
Yes. So, well, his uncle's alive.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Like the memoir perspective.
Yes. So I recently watched The Sixth Sense for the first time. And you realize, obviously, spoiler alert for... It's not a spoiler for anyone who has lived in the world. You realize, of course, that Bruce Willis has been dead the whole time because no one talks to him.
Mm-hmm.
No one responds to him. And so as I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, okay. We have multiple perspectives from dead people. So that's not actually that weird. But like if they wouldn't have given us the dad, I might have been like, weird
you
that
known
we
earlier.
Get perspective from the mother. Even though she's dead, I knew there was something fishy about her. And then when they mentioned the flight, I was like, oh, surely it's not his mother. And then it was.
Yeah. I think that this is when it went from being... It almost veered into like magical realism for me here.
Okay, I see that.
Where I was like, this man, this author, is too smart to think that his reader, who are we talking about, who was saying that she always assumes like a level of intelligence in her reader?
Claire Keegan.
Claire Keegan. I think that he's probably in agreement with Claire Keegan. Like, he's going to afford us a generous amount of intellectualism in our reading of this. The reader is too smart to just be like, oh my God, what a coincidence. That's so crazy. Like, that's absurd. There's no way that it could just be that the reader could just think that this was a crazy coincidence that he happens to read in this, you know, a friend is like, hey, do you know about this Persian artist in the Brooklyn Museum across the country from his tiny Midwest town, in which he doesn't seem to be reading art news?
Yep.
or like, yeah, keeping an eye on exhibitions or things like this. And then he goes and she's there. And then it's his mother?
Yeah.
A week before she dies? I was just like, absolutely not. We have to be veering into magical realism or like a mysticism. I know in some of the chapters take on Persian storytelling. What you call it, a myth? Stories.
Mm-hmm.
Where often in stories, when it's not just Persian myths, it's all sorts of ancient lore that gets passed down, it's kind of like hit you over the head with the plot so that you pick up on the underlying theme and the lesson. And do you think that's what he was trying to do? Like when you were saying, oh, at the end, it ends up being about finding meaning in your day-to-day and the relationships that you have. Do you think that the plot had to be so obvious, sort of like a fable, for that to come through clearly?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do.
Because I really struggled with, I didn't struggle, but I rolled my eyes at the mom. And then I was like, he's too smart for this. What is happening here?
I almost thought about it. Like, so Cyrus talks about when he can't sleep, he would imagine conversations between characters, people who have died. And so like his mother in his head has spoken to anyone from Marge Simpson to like dead writers that he loves, you know? And we get some of those chapters. And so part of me likes to view it almost in that way, where this is a conversation he was able to have, real or not, because I too got to that part. And that is almost, that's kind of what brought it from a 5-star to a 4-star read for me.
Same.
Is yeah, it, I knocked feel it down just star. Like a little too convenient?
Yeah. Yeah, to me it was almost like a 50% of the way it split for me when he went. I was even not like I was on board with Cyrus going to Brooklyn. I'm like that I bought. I was like, okay, yeah, makes sense. It's there. He's talking to this woman. But then once it started getting a little more contrived,
I was like,
The magic of the beauty of it and the magic of it really fell away for me. And I was like, oh, now I just feel. Now this feels fake, in a way.
Yes, certainly harder to believe. But,
yeah, and I think that part of what makes the first half, and certainly parts of the rest, really profound is that it feels real. It speaks to a real, and not real in the sense that it's like, oh, I can see this happening next door to me, but real in that it seems to be capturing like a real human experience of the world.
Yeah.
And that fell flat for me in the second half when it's like no one is discovering their dead mom who has died in a tragic
yeah
geopolitical event 25 years after the fact because she's a famous artist and you're like I was just like, oh my God, this became so beyond anyone's experience of life.
I think it because I enjoyed the kind of stories of Orchidae and getting the idea that she too kind of got this life that she wasn't supposed to live.
Yeah.
And I think that storyline running parallel to Cyrus would have been really interesting, but but crossing them made it feel sort of unbelievable. Where if he had, if we were able to learn about these differently, I have no idea how you would do this. Obviously, I couldn't do it, but I enjoyed getting to know her. But it did feel just far too convenient.
Yeah. It reminded me of, as I was reading this, I saw the movie The Last Days of Heaven.
Okay.
Terrence Malick. I had a similar complaint. I was like, oh, I feel like these two let me down in a similar way. Where they beautifully capture, the day-to-day and just like what it, the beauty of life and its ordinariness. And then about halfway through, it's like someone was like, well, but what's going to happen? And I felt like the author almost fell into the like temptation that Cyrus is fighting and seeking the whole book. Like something has to happen for it to be meaningful.
Yeah. I think that's an astute observation.
And it's like, this would have been so much more meaningful if it hadn't been condensed into a series of plot points and things happening, if it was just him being in the most beautiful and profound aspects of the book, similar to Last Days of Heaven, where when nothing was happening and you weren't really sure where this fit in or if it was supposed to be drawing into another plot point, it was just being. And I thought that's what the, you know, what he was getting at, is that that is where the real meaning of life is.
Yeah.
But then he didn't really achieve that himself.
Yeah. That was hard. I thought it was too much.
It's too much. And just devastating because it was so good.
I know. Like,
I was like, no. And even when it was too much, it was so well written and
so good.
Entertaining and sharp and energetic. And I mean, he's a poet, so it's just every line is just, drum tight. But, ugh.
Yeah, no, I fully agree.
You let the plot get away with it. I haven't seen anyone. I read a couple of reviews and I didn't see this complaint, so I was eager to talk to you about it.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's fine. Like, obviously, I still give it four stars. I loved this book. But I was like, there's maybe a perfect book in there.
Yeah, and this wasn't it. But it could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Okay.
I know. It makes me really, like, I will be so excited to read what he writes next, because
absolutely,
I think he's a brilliant writer. And a brilliant writer. It didn't quite hit the bullseye in a pretty critical way for me, I think.
Yeah. While we're on Orchidae, should we talk about art? Art and meaning, art as living.
Oh, yeah, I left that note. I was like, sure, what do you want to say about it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's talk about art. What did I mean about that? I think I was thinking about, just that he's dealing with some, Cyrus is like, obviously, keep talking about the fact that he's grappling with death. He's thinking about death, which is a heady thing. And not everyone is drawn to art as a way of cementing meaning or creating meaning. I think we are. And I think that in some core level, humanity probably is. But this is a book about people who think that way, I think. And like,
definitely,
he doesn't even question, like, oh, how should I do this? He's like, oh, I'm going to write a book. Like, he knows that to be a manner in which he can put himself forward in a in a lasting, preserved, meaningful way. But that is kind of interestingly juxtaposed against Orchidae, who her last piece of art is completely transient. And I think what seems to appeal to Cyrus about writing a book is that it's there forever. It's permanent. It's a permanent record of his, of what means something to him and what matters about him. And then we have Orchidae, who's, a, you know, at the end of her life, and her last piece of great art is conversations that happen with people that then are lost into time. And I just thought that juxtaposition was really interesting. I don't know. Do you have anything to anything to think about that?
When you mentioned Cyrus being interested in the, like, memorialization.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
Just using the word permanent with Cyrus feels so strange to me, because he doesn't seem particularly interested in anything permanent except for death, obviously. But there is, and perhaps that's why he struggles to put something on the paper.
Yeah.
It's because he does view this as something sort of permanent.
He wants to get it right.
And Orchidae, like, art is her life. It has been the source of her life. And generally, it's such a solo pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
But this exhibit is so community-oriented and for others, really. That's seemingly not about her. I do think it's interesting. So she commits suicide. Yes?
Well, I think she just dies. She decides. I mean, she's rejecting treatment. And then
At the very end.
It becomes I guess technically she commits suicide, but she's terminally ill and she decides to just end it. Yeah.
But she makes an active choice, I believe.
Yeah.
The day after she tells Cyrus about the flight. Am I wrong about that?
Wait, I don't actually remember this. We're going to have to fact check this.
Let's see.
I thought she just died. Just died, I say.
Oh, here it is. I guess they found her this morning. I heard maybe she took a handful of pain pills, something like that. She was totally fine yesterday. You were here, weren't you?
Yeah. I guess we don't know.
We don't know for sure.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't really think about it too much because I was like, well, she's not that refusing treatment is committing suicide. I don't mean to draw that at all, but she wasn't.
No, she wasn't actively.
There was no question that she was going to survive.
She was going to die. She was dying. That's the exhibit. Yeah. She was dying, but I did think it was interesting, particularly with Cyrus's interest in martyrdom, that she made a more active choice in that.
That's true. No, I think that's a really good point.
Instead of talking to Cyrus, like, she is not the one who says, yes, I am your mother. This is me. This is what happened. He has to hear about that from her ex-wife.
Yeah. I was like, oh, she's just in too much pain. Maybe I was too quick to just be like, oh, there's nothing of that. You know what? Maybe this also ties back to him. Like, did this plot get away from him, or are we supposed to be looking into this intently? Although, how do you write a book about martyrs and not think really hard about?
I think
whether
it matters
when it's going to die. Yeah,
I think it matters a lot, because I think either it says, like, that she couldn't do it. She couldn't have this conversation with Cyrus, or she is making herself into the martyr that he wanted her to be, or she's done what she needed to do. She lived a life where she made great art. She found love. She lost love. And then she found her boy. She's done.
Yeah.
But I think
the last thing we hear from her, the last Orchida, I think you're right too, but the last Orchida chapter says, Rhea's kind of like a suicide note, I guess. If you think about it that way. What I want to say is that I was happy. Not always, not even mostly, but I did know real deep joy. Maybe everyone gets a certain amount to use up over a lifetime, and I just used my lifetime's allotment, especially quickly with Layla. But I don't think it was a tragedy in my life. Tragedies are relentless. Nobody could ask for more than what I've had.
Yeah, that does read like a suicide note.
But also, it also reads just like any kind of last reflection on a long life, at the end of a long life. Like it, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
I could see that.
If I came across that and I'm Cyrus, the child that she knew existed, never sought out, now has met, and she's like, no worries, I had enough. I had everything I needed. Bye. Like, that, I would find that a little painful.
Yeah. Why does he make this happen? I truly don't understand it. This is why I'm like, it doesn't make sense that she kills herself.
Yeah.
Because at this point, he doesn't have to find out.
Yeah. I don't know.
I
think it is definitely significant. But I don't have a full grasp on why.
Yeah.
I think partially, like, we know from the beginning, she is not actually that interested in being a mother.
No, definitely not.
And she had a life that she wanted to have. And she's not making any apologies for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, that's true. And in some ways, she sort of refuses to be martyred, if we think about it like that, right?
That's true.
Like she's like, I'm going out on my own terms. I'm creating my own meaning, defining my own meaning on my own terms.
True.
Yeah. She writes her own obituary.
Yeah, she does. That is mostly, like, she lived the life she wanted to live. She was an artist. She loved it. Exactly. What matters to her is the art. I think after Layla, the only thing that mattered to her was the art.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about,
okay,
unless you have more things.
Yeah. No, now I'm just thinking about this.
Something that, so in college, I took a Southern Lit class. And Southern Lit is often bleak.
Yeah.
And at the end of every book, my professor would ask us, is this a hopeful book?
Ooh.
And often you would have read something that is just like deeply upsetting. And then she'd be like, actually, this is very helpful and this is why. And
yeah,
I feel this is a incredibly hopeful book.
Oh, I agree.
And even though we have just spent a lot of time, like it's heavy themes, this book is bursting with hope.
With hope. Totally. Oh, yeah. No, I think it's probably about hope more than anything else, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe another word for hope, like prayer. Or, right?
I see that.
belief in something bigger and something beyond, especially located in community. Like, let me define hope for you.
No, keep going.
Yeah. No, I just agree. It is. Yeah, I guess any story about addiction is, or recovering from addiction is a story of hope also.
I also think there's something interesting about, like, the exceptionality of addiction, and that was something that came up in the book I talked about episodes ago, Rob Delaney's book.
Yeah.
And how you feel, and the quote you read earlier kind of gets on this, how you feel like you're different and your suffering is different than everyone else's suffering, and you are exceptional in this way. And your addiction is exceptional. So your healing would not be made in the same way that other people's healing is made.
Mm.
And I think the end of this book, Cyrus sees himself as part of the world for the first time. And for most of his life, he sees himself as separate from the world.
Yeah.
In an exceptional way. And then when he is in Prospect Park, shout out. That was so satisfying to me to have him just like walking around Prospect Park. I was like, oh, I've sat on that bed.
Yeah.
Hello.
Aw.
But I was like, oh, yeah, I too have stood in Prospect Park and felt so small in this incredible ecosystem of a city and a world, and recognizing that you are just part of something, and him finally seeing how valuable his relationship with Z is. And I feel like maybe the reason that it is so hopeful is because we are watching him like take his first steps into the world as part of the world.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. That I think that feels really, really true. You do feel hopeful. I felt good when I closed it.
Yeah.
Ah, how about this? Okay. This is the very end.
Okay.
It was almost unbearable how good and warm it felt to be there, together in the pond's golden light. The feeling of prayer, not prayer itself, but the stillness it leaves, lifted from the earth, smelling of grass and wood smoke. So,
see, the writing is so good.
I know. But I was right about the prayer. I feel like I said that and I was like, what am I saying? But
what am I talking about?
Praying is just hope, right? An act of hope in a certain way.
I think so.
It feels that way at the end. And yeah, how good and warm it feels to be there together. You're right. I think that's exactly what you're saying, right?
Yes.
In this togetherness.
I think it is.
Gorgeous.
Okay.
Gorgeous.
We should wrap this up.
Yeah, we should. Woo! I wonder how much editing I'm going to have to do on this one.
Yeah.
I feel like I said some things that were maybe a little bit loony.
Yeah, I said a lot of things that were a little bit loony, but here we are. Okay. I didn't prepare a fun question for us. Let me think of one.
Okay, wait. I have a question.
You do?
I have a question. Yeah, I do.
I'm ready.
Okay. If Martyr were a Taylor Swift era, what era would Martyr be?
Okay, this is interesting. I'm between two.
And this is in honor of the other tortured poet news
so true.
Of the week.
I actually do think it is, this might be recency bias, but walk with me here. I see tortured poets for a variety of reasons.
Yes. Yes. Okay. No, I was thinking the same thing. And then I was almost going to say the question was going to be too targeted. And then I was like, I have to give her the opportunity to choose the same thing as me. So go on.
I do think it is tortured poets for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, we're talking about a tortured poet.
Yep.
too. I think there is something exceptional that gets a little bit lost in the noise. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt about the album, where I'm like, oh no, there is a perfect album in here. If you would have just like killed some of the darlings.
Cut it down. Yep.
And you didn't kill any of the darlings. And there's something, I think, intentional in the sprawling nature of it and the unbelievability of it. And I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But I do think there's something potentially better if we had maybe called it.
Exactly. Again, missed the bullseye, but, you know, it's hitting the board. But I was also thinking of, like, thematically heavy, but also deeply humorous at times.
So fucking funny.
Funny and fantastical and, clever, biting, but also very sad.
Yeah.
Dealing, or not even sad, but just, like, taking on some tough times.
Yeah. No, I thought about it a little bit. Even just when we were talking earlier, I'm like, I feel the same way about tortured poets as I do about this.
Yeah.
You're like, man, we could have had it all. I wish I could unrecall how we almost had it all. Taylor.
There you go. There you go. Once again, just maybe drop the plot.
Yeah, I think we lost the plot.
We lost the plot. Or what we needed to do was lose the plot.
I also think a lot of times you need to write something, but you don't need to share that thing. Like, I think we needed to write the mom plot, but I don't actually think we needed it in the book. Like, I think we needed to work through that idea.
No, like,
that
story isn't important. Yeah, but then don't publish it.
But then we needed a different idea. And the same thing, some of the songs on TPD, I was like, I totally see how you needed to write that. We didn't need to put it on the album.
Yeah.
The title track, I'm like, girly pop, I love you so much. That's a journal. You put that in your journal.
Yes. I was like, don't say that out loud to us.
Like, you are admitting to things that I would go to my grave with.
Yeah. I'm not even going to repeat some of it because I was like, that is so cringy.
Oh.
I feel embarrassed to have it in my ears.
Every person who's listening to this already knows me, so knows that I am a big fan. There are multiple songs I've listened to one time. I was like, that's enough.
Yeah, and that'll be it.
I don't need to hear that again. The only reason I was conflicted is because I feel the same way about Lover, where Lover has some of the best tracks she's written. There is so much fucking fluff.
Yeah.
You need to get rid of. And I think there are parts of this book that I'm like, okay, if we just kind of culled some of this fat, it would be a perfect novel, which, once again, I'm so excited for anything that comes next for him, because for a debut, this is astounding.
Yeah, no, and similarly, it's like, oh, everything is good, but as a whole, you really do. I think, and maybe I don't want to be like, oh, he's never written fiction before, so he's figuring out his form, because I think anyone can have, you know, an amazing debut, and this was. But every single chapter was phenomenal, just as a whole, it didn't quite pull it together.
I think that's true. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
we hope he keeps it up, because I'll be thrilled to read what he writes. I was also like, you know, some of the stories read like short stories, or sorry, some of the chapters read like short stories. And those were some of my favorite parts. And I was like, please put some short stories in The New Yorker. Let's get some short stories out. I would love that. I think that form worked really well for him.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. We got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
Tommy Orange.
In 2 weeks. Yeah, that's in a month, but that's our next book club book, Wandering Stars, Tommy Orange. But next week, or in 2 weeks when the next episode comes out, we're doing a Mother's Day episode.
Yeah, because we love moms. So, shout out to both of our moms.
We love moms.
The only ones who have made it this far into this episode.
True. Although I do have to give a shout out to my dad, who was the only person. We are putting this episode out a week late because we have other jobs.
Unfortunately. We are that all human beings.
Do take precedent when the time comes. But my dad was the only one who on Thursday was like, where's the new episode of Book Fair?
Oh. So,
Dad, I know you're listening through these too.
That's true.
So we'll shout out the moms and the dads.
But my brother also is an avid listener. Ryan, we love you.
Should we just list everyone now?
We shouldn't, but I feel like, I'm sorry, moms always get the praise on the podcast. There are other family members also listening.
Yes, and we love them all. But we are focusing in, not on our own moms as much as they would love that. We would love that. But on our favorite literary moms, we're going to talk about, some of our favorite books about moms.
That's going to be an amazing episode for me because one of my favorite things ever, stories about moms, fascinated by motherhood.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. I didn't even know that about you. Let's talk about it next week. Well, I wouldn't have said like, oh, Ashley's favorite thing to read about is motherhood. No, I didn't realize it was that interesting to you. Okay, well, it's going to be a great conversation.
We'll get into the reasons for that on the next episode.
On the next step. All right. Until then, happy reading.
Happy reading. Bye, buddy.
Bye, buddy.